Thank you. Please proceed.
This is case number DO-2401568 in the case of Robert Maruk. I believe Dr. Maruk, are you present?
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Maruk. Wonderful.
Yeah, it seemed to... Hang on. I'm trying to get this video.
Yep, please do. Do you have representation while you're working on that?
No, I don't.
No problem at all.
Well, I got up early to make sure this was working. Oh, there we go.
You got it. Good work.
Thank you, Doctor.
Lindsay, would you like to swear the doctor in?
Dr. Maruk, would you please raise your right hand? Do you swear under penalty of perjury to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Perfect. Who's presenting this case?
And I'll have Mr. Dominic provide a supplement.
Perfect.
This case was sent for expert review by a board-certified plastic surgeon. The complaint is regarding a malpractice case settlement on Dr. Maruk's behalf. The case settled for $700,000. The complaint alleges negligent breast augmentation in a 49-year-old female and improper treatment of a post-operative infection requiring multiple procedures with subsequent permanent disfigurements, and a Clostridium difficile infection. The OMC felt Dr. Maruk may have fallen below the standard of care. He states the patient underwent multiple surgeries with postoperative healing issues or complications. He states the manner in which the complications were addressed deviated from the standard of care. He notes Dr. Maruk proceeded with additional surgeries, such as repaired implant replacements, without allowing the patient to heal properly prior to implant exchange. He notes Dr. Maruk also did not fully address postoperative infections or proper wound care. The OMC notes the deviation from the standard of care was somewhat difficult to determine in this particular case because a significant part of the medical records appear to be missing. He states, according to Dr. Maruk, the patient was given permission to copy her own chart because she was an employee, but when the chart was returned, all the dictated consultations, operative reports, and office notes were missing.
Very much, Mr. Dominic. I appreciate that. Dr. Maruk, would you like to speak to this case?
Yes. This patient had undergone breast augmentation with two additional revisions in Minnesota. She came to me for other surgeries beginning in 2016. Other surgeries were performed. I was, aware and actually sent her up, to Minnesota to have the revisions performed by the original surgeon who performed her breast surgery. After a period of time, she was dissatisfied. She had two unsuccessful revisions, and I relented and agreed to try and help fix her breasts. During that time, she's a nurse. She asked for training and how to get training in Botox and cosmetic fillers. She's wanting to become a nurse anesthetist. I guided her in training. She was not an employee, but I did allow her to rent office space during her training, which was performed. Most of the training was performed by the companies that she would sell, that provided her with the products that she would sell to her patients. During the time, we had a close relationship, not with just her, but her husband, who had had surgery with me. In 2019, after performing breast surgery and then revision surgery to increase the size of her breasts as she desired, she began having some complications. She's in the process of fixing the complications through revision surgery. Unfortunately, I had to close my office, secondary to personal medical issues. She and her husband were very supportive. She came in, cleaned out her office. Along with her husband, she asked if she could have a copy of her medical records. I agreed. A couple months later, I found out she was filing a lawsuit. I went to retrieve the medical records and was told that she had actually taken them. During the proceedings, we received a copy of one of her charts, one of two she had. The second chart we never received. When I received a copy of the first chart, most of the dictations were missing, which included the consultation, surgery dictations, post-op visits. That's kind of where we stood. I didn't have much of a leg to stand on as far as defense because of the missing charts. So I turned it over to the insurance company to handle it the best that they could. Well, I'd like for you to know this case and the case after this, the two pages knew each other well. I found out from the case that's coming up next that she informed me that the Mrs. C, who is this case is concerning, was filing a lawsuit, and according to the patient that told me this,
Dr. Maruk, if I could stop you there for just a moment. I know, obviously, your name's involved, but we go through great effort to keep each case standing under its own merits. So I just want
okay. Sorry about that.
No, don't apologize. I totally understand what you're saying. I'm just trying to do the best thing I can for you in this education. But please go on if there was anything else. I'm sorry to have to break your case off.
No, I did see the patient since she did work in the office. I saw her on multiple occasions after surgery. I see her on average in the office three times a week and would probably examine her once a week or once every other week. A lot of her surgery is kind of pushed forward by her husband wanting her to have larger implants. I kind of relented to try and appease her and her husband. When the office is closed, she prior to the office closing, she had some complications and sought another consultation, which I didn't have a problem with. When they left the office and cleaned out everything when the office was closing, she voiced no concerns at that time. I didn't find out about the lawsuit until someone else had mentioned it to me and then received a letter from my malpractice company.
Thank you very much, Dr. Murph. I appreciate that. Mr. Bohol, I assume you do not have a complaint in here. I do not see anybody listening.
That's correct.
Thank you very much. If I may, any questions from the board?
You have questions?
I would like to go first.
It's not always a good thing.
Dr. McGirt, are you currently practicing?
I'm practicing. I'm not practicing surgery. Work at the Arizona State Veterans Home here in Phoenix, and then I drive down to Yuma once or twice a week. So it's kind of primary care.
And in this case, I know you mentioned some of the issues being that the complainant worked in your office and you had a relationship with the husband, and did any of those factors kind of contributed to some of the issues in this case, or some of your decision
yes.
making?
Looking back, it did in the decision-making process only because I was trying to make her happy, and thinking back, she was trying to make her husband happy. I didn't realize it till the end, but probably should realize that at the start that it wasn't. Let's say that the surgery, I guess, was partially for her, but then partially for her husband, in order to achieve what he wanted her to look like, and not necessarily what she wanted to look like.
In the past, I know you're not practicing currently, but in the past, were you typically, did the patients typically dictate your surgical decisions? Or was this a one-time situation because of you knew this patient, or?
In the past with this type of surgery, listen to the patient. You try to understand as best you can their goals and what they're looking for, and then make the decision whether you feel confident in achieving those goals.
This patient had the complications. Can you talk about the complications this patient had and what was done?
Yes, she had complications after her first two revisions with up in Minnesota. She had complications with the original surgery and then her two revisions. First time I corrected her revisions, she was pleased, but her breasts were smaller than she would like and smaller than they were from her original surgery. We talked about trying to get her to the point where she was happy and I was happy. So once things settled down, we went back in to try and achieve the goal that she desired.
And if you had a similar case now, what would you have done different?
I thought I would have been happy with my first decision and her first surgery. And her breast size, and explain to her that I would not be comfortable with trying to achieve what she was looking for. I mean, she did originally have the size that she was looking for. But they weren't in the right position. They're falling on her arm. They were too low on her chest. There were multiple things that that were wrong, although they were the size and a bra that she wanted. Looking back, yeah, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't be influenced by, the relationship, as far as friendship. Probably wouldn't be pushed into trying to achieve something I thought I could achieve, but had questions in the back of my mind whether I could get her to the point she would be happy.
Thank you.
If I can just expand on Dr. Chapin's questions a little bit before Dr. Cunningham. So is that one of the discussions that you normally have and document as far as the likelihood of success on achieving the patient's goals?
Yes. We cover the potential, the risk, the benefit of the surgery, and what can possibly happen in trying to achieve.
No, that answers the question. That's fine. That's good, Dr. Murray. And is that a conversation that you did document but are having problems with because those sections of the medical records are missing?
Yes.
No problem. And from what your discussion with that patient, apparently there were several surgeries that followed with complications. How many total surgeries were there from the time you were in care?
With her breast, I believe there were six, and that was in trying to achieve, some of them were replacement implants to try and get her to a bigger size.
But that's okay. Do you think you are more likely to have had those complications secondary to the patient's requesting something that was beyond what your thought of reasonable expectation was?
No, I didn't expect any. I didn't expect any complications.
So you mentioned the patient. One moment, doctor. You mentioned the patient made request for you that you think manipulated something beyond what you would have normally recommended. Is that correct?
In hindsight, yes. At the time, no.
Okay.
In time, I was confident we could
that
achieve.
I appreciate it. Well, you're good. You're good. I'm trying to work with you here. Thank you. Dr. Cunningham?
All the questions I pretty much have been answered that I had questions. The thing that I found still that you know, she was allowed to have access to her records and to make copies of her records. Tell me why you thought that was okay.
You mean to make copy of her records?
Right.
Well,
she wasn't an employee of yours, was she?
No, but she worked.
Did she sign for a records release to have her records released?
Yeah, I signed record release so she could have a copy of her records. I mean, the patients,
okay.
They belong to the office, but they also belong to the patient.
Correct.
To her medical records. So I signed to release them. I didn't sign for her to take them, and I was a little perplexed because I would have thought she'd known because she's a nurse that she knows records cannot leave the office. She had medical records there on her patients, and she knew enough that they're not to leave the office.
Right.
Her husband's an attorney. Pretty sure he knew, records aren't to leave the office.
So you didn't realize that, doctor, just for a minute. Sorry to interrupt you. So you didn't realize the records were gone until they filed the malpractice case and they asked for the records. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. That's my only question about that. Any other questions that people wanted to ask in the open session? I was wanting to make a motion to go into executive session
to obtain medical information from your doctor?
Personal
confidence, I'm saying.
You can add on illegal device test.
And illegal device as well.
Okay.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Any opposed? All in favor indicate with an aye.
Aye.
An invitation to move to a confidential web space here, and we'll be joining in a moment. Perfect. Do I have any further questions or comments from the board? If not, I would entertain a motion.
I would make a motion for a letter of concern, if you wouldn't mind. I don't know if we have to list everything what we're concerned about.
I'd recommend mentioning 32-1854-6, practice that may harm in light of the patient's multiple surgeries. 20, in light of the other ARSs mentioned. 21, in this case, failing to maintain undecision-making of allowing access to, although that might have simply been stolen, I'm not entirely certain. And 39, a practice that endangers patient or public health. Would that be adequate?
I'd be agreeable to all that.
Okay.
I'll take that recommendation and add that to my motion.
I have a motion on the floor. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. Any further discussion on the motion? Any opposed? All in favor, indicate with an aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Case number 0156A is closed. Would you care to move on, Mr. Bohol?
Yes. So case number DO240157A and Robert Maroof. Dr. Maroof has signed in to speak, and I'll have he's been sworn in, and I'll have Mr. Dominic provide a summary.
This case was sent for expert review by a board-certified plastic surgeon. The complaint is regarding a malpractice case settled on Dr. Maroof's behalf. The case settled for $575,000. The complaint alleges negligent breast augmentation, improper treatment of post-operative infection with permanent disfigurement. The OMC felt Dr. Maroof may have fallen below the standard of care. He states the patient underwent multiple surgeries, specifically 11, with post-operative healing issues or complications over a four-year period. The patient MM, a then 37-year-old female, was first seen by Dr. Maroof on November 19, 2015. She had two previous breast surgeries and desired bigger and higher implants. The text messages included in the available records showed the patient's husband and Dr. Maroof were friends. The patient reported she was a tobacco smoker. Dr. Maroof performed an implant exchange and bilateral capsulorraphy on December 14, 2015. She had complications of incision breakdown, poor healing, problems with the proline suture, and infection. Dr. Maroof removed and reinserted the implants, irrigated the incision multiple times, removed suture, prescribed antibiotics, removed solution, and then refilled the solution to the breast implants multiple times. The patient was admitted to Mercy Gilbert Medical Center on April 27, 2022, with a possible suicide attempt, reporting depression due to marital issues and poor body image, as well as complications of necrosis of the breast, skin, and nipple. The malpractice settlement was reached on June 20, 2023. The OMC felt Dr. Maroof may have fallen below the standard of care in the following areas. Dr. Maroof allowed the patient to direct her own care, seeking much larger implants than usual. You know, the surgeon should have very strict boundaries with patients making such requests. Dr. Maroof did not address the patient smoking at any time. He notes in cases with repeated wound healing issues and complications, tobacco use must be addressed. Dr. Maroof performed 11 surgical procedures. The OMC felt surgical treatment should have been abandoned long before reaching 11 procedures, especially trying to do so with larger than average overfilled saline implants. And except for four postoperative pictures in November of 2016, there is a complete lack of photographic record.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dominic. Mr. Bohol, do we have a complainant logged in?
We do not have a complainant signed in to speak.
Thank you. Dr. Maroof, would you like to speak to this case?
So this patient had had two previous surgeries. She came in. She was she had a lot of asymmetry. I recommended that she replace the implants. and go with a smaller size. And that's what we initially did. Came back with complaints that she wanted to be at least 1,000 cc's on both sides like she had been before. So we tried to achieve that goal and correct the asymmetry that she had had. During the course, her and her husband would, you know, invite myself over to their house and family, but I never went. He would send text messages, and I did respond to a few of them, not a lot of them. He had mentioned that after the practice was closed, he they rented at the time up through, I think, into July of 2020 after the office was closed. The text made no mention that she was having any problems. And then I didn't learn that she had went into Mercy Gilbert in, I believe, 2022 with some breast issues with her breast and necrosis and those type of things. So I wasn't aware of anything that was going on with her medically over the little over 2 years after I last saw her in the practice. And there was no mention, at least after the practice was closed for the first 6 months. They did come by and get a copy of their medical records early on, like in March of 2020. I had referred her out or gave her a list of several other cosmetic or plastic surgeons that she may go to, and she would need a copy of her medical records in order to take with her. The smoking issue, I think she originally told me that she didn't smoke. I found out by office staff later on that she was seen outside smoking. That was after the first couple of procedures. We did address that on a personal level, and she said, oh, she rarely smokes. She's trying to quit. It's only when she's upset or anxious that her husband she'll smoke. But I didn't pry deeper into how much she smoked, which I probably should have. And then after the office was closed, I lost track of her about 6 months after the office had closed. I know she had mentioned somewhere that I had done some procedure after the office was closed. And the time they had mentioned that I had performed the procedure, I no longer had an office. It had been sold a month or two earlier. So I was a little surprised to see that. I'm not sure what happened in between those, you know, 2 years from the time I last saw her to the time she went to Mercy Gilbert.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Dr. Amr. So just to clarify, there were 11 total surgeries by you on this patient?
Yes. Some of those are, well, what I considered at the time as minor procedures, a spitting suture, things like that, trimming of some excess skin, things that were, you know, generally performed under local.
Understand, that helps.
And then...
could you ask me this, though? How many surgeries or procedures were revisions secondary to the patient's dissatisfaction?
On hers, I believe it was five.
Five of them? Good. Thank you. Any other questions from the board? Just to make sure I emphasize this to the board, each case is held on its own merits. In this case, we have more objective evidence for a lack of documentation, because we actually have records. There are certainly concerns with a number of procedures addressing potential causes of complications, such as tobacco use and potentially increased patient harm besides dissatisfaction with the surgery, with being hospitalized for suicidal behavior, mentioning in that concerns for poor body image and disfigurement. So these two cases are not identical, although similar. That being said, do I have a motion? If not, I would like to make a motion for an administrative warning, citing ARS 32-1854-6, endangering or engaging in a practice of medicine that can endanger a patient. 20, referring to above and below. 21, failing to establish or maintain records, especially citing the post-op pictures, of which there are only four available for November 3rd of 2016. And 39, any conduct or practice that endangers patients or the public's health or may be usually expected to do so. Any other recommendations for the administrative warning? Or I'll take a second.
I'll second that.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? If not, I'll take a roll call.
Okay. Ms. Pichelle.
Aye.
Dr. Cunningham.
Yes.
Dr. Walker.
Yes.
Dr. Schittbaum. Dr. Madam.
Aye. Thank you. That being said, Dr. Marouk, I appreciate the fact that you found some place that you're more comfortable working. I highly encourage you to do so, and thank you for the primary care that you are providing.
I thank you for the time to listen to me today. I know you guys are busy.
Well, we're busy because of the need, and I appreciate you participating in a professional fashion. Thank you. Honestly, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Bohall, are we okay moving on to 6?
Yes.
Is the board staff comfortable moving on to 6 at this point?
That is correct, yes. If we can move to 6B, PO 250116A, Justin Kim. I believe Dr. Kim is signed in to speak.
Perfect. And I don't need to swear him in, is that correct?
That's correct.
Good. I'm getting this.
Thank you, Dr. Kim. And I'll have Ms. Castro provide the summary.
On the application, Dr. Kim disclosed being placed on academic probation at Wright Center Family Medicine Residency Program. Prior to his probation, he was on a 10-month remediation plan effective June 20, 2024 through April of 25. On April 18, 2025, Dr. Kim was placed on probation based on failure to make adequate progress with the remediation plan initially created by the Focused Assessment Committee. The committee had ongoing concerns related to the failure to progress in the core competency of professionalism as it relates to time management, including the timely documentation and completion of tasks, as referenced in Family Medicine 2.0 milestones of professionalism, accountability, conscientiousness, specifically continuing to have difficulty keeping up with deliverables and completing tasks and responsibilities in a timely manner. Additionally, the program provided confirmation that Dr. Kim successfully completed and passed his probationary period June 17th of 2025 with a scheduled last day of the training program as July 2nd, 2025. Dr. Kim holds an active license in Colorado, issued August 20th of 2025, with no disciplinary action.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Dr. Kim, can you tell me a little bit about what you have done and what you are doing, and anything you'd like to add about the probation, et cetera?
So I was placed on probation for non-clinical administrative tests, and it was mostly getting my monthly evaluations delivered on time. The monthly evaluations kind of had to do with handing my attendings a piece of paper 3 times a month, taking pictures of that, emailing it to the program, and a lot of time other clinical duties and things were prioritized above that. But I worked with my program, and I worked on my time management skills and reprioritized things. And ultimately graduated on time in alignment with my program, with my other issues. I have that license in Colorado, trying to do some locum work in the meantime, but otherwise the probationary period was completed in alignment with my program.
Good, thank you. I have a question for Dr. Cunningham. Dr. Cunningham, when you finished, how much of your time
Well, when I first started, I'm going to say it was more patient care. Now, as time has gone on, it's more administration. So I think what you're trying to say, Dr. Maiden, is it's not going to get better, doctor, okay? as you go on through practice, and everybody I tell I'm 39, nobody believes me on the board anymore, but I've been doing this for a long time, almost 40 years in practice. There's going to be more and more paperwork. So you're going to have to get things in on time. You're going to have to get things that are, especially, you know, for all kinds of things, all the way from your malpractice to applying for certain, you know, if you're trying to get on staff, any of those things, even insurance companies, you have to be absolutely right on top of it. And don't let your girlfriend or your wife or whoever do it. You are the one responsible. Don't let the office manager do it too. You're the one responsible for it, doctor. So I hope that you learned a good lesson from this. But as far as I can see, it sounds like you have.
That was it. Any further questions for Dr. Kim, or do I have a motion? Please.
I'd like to make a motion to grant an unrestricted license.
Second that.
Motion for Dr. Chapin and a second for Dr. Cunningham. Do I have any further discussion? Are there any opposed? All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
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 Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Kim. We look forward to your working.
Welcome to Arizona.
Welcome to Arizona.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Mr. Bohol, where are we moving to next?
Moving on to case number DO250168A, Julie Stevens. I believe Dr. Stevens has signed in to speak. And I'll have Ms. Castro provide the summary.
Castro.
Dr. Stevens has applied for licensure November 25th of 2024. On the application submitted to the board, Dr. Stevens disclosed that her license in Michigan was subject to disciplinary action, and she was required to pay a civil penalty of $1,500 for not having a proper controlled substance license when she dispensed one pill of Suboxone for patients after the induction phase of opioid addiction treatment. This was to use overnight if needed prior to follow-up visit the next day. Dr. Stevens further stated that Suboxone was new at the time and she did not know she was doing anything wrong. Board staff's investigation notes that the complaint resulting in the civil penalty by the Michigan Board not only included allegations of purchasing and dispensing controlled substances without the proper license, but also allegations of self-dispensing and failing to report the dispensing to the Michigan Automated Prescription System. The complaint found that Dr. Stevens had purchased 3,000 Vicodin tablets and 7 16-ounce bottles of hydrocan syrup between February 2005 and January 2006, which were delivered to her office. The complaint also found that the medications were stored at her residence and there was no documentation as to the quantities dispensed to herself. The disciplinary committee of the Michigan Board of Osteopathic Medicine issued a consent order for the civil penalty in June 2007, citing a violation of the public health code. The committee noted that Dr. Stevens had already completed CME and a substance use evaluation. The Michigan Osteopathic Board did not report this action to the National Practitioner Data Bank. Dr. Stevens holds 35 licenses.
Thank you very much, Ms. Casper. I appreciate it. And Dr. Stevens, would you like to speak to this case? I do believe so. Just let us know when you can hear us, Dr. Stevens. We'll give that a moment.
I'm sorry, I had a hard time hearing.
That's okay. It looks like you were frozen on our side. Can you tell us about this case?
I can hear you.
Yeah, Dr. Stevens, could you try turning off your video? See, you might not be in a good enough service area.
I can hear you.
Okay, give us just a moment, Dr. Stevens. Is that a technical problem on our side, do you think, Mr. Bohol?
I think it's for, as you mentioned.
Am I okay now?
We can hear you.
You're broken.
Are you able to hear me?
We can hear
you.
That sounds better.
Yeah, it sounds better.
Try again here. Can you tell us what happened in this situation?
Did you turn my video off?
Okay,
it was 20 some odd years ago, and I've never. I just turned it on.
Yeah. Try that again.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes, it sounds better. Go ahead and try. That's it. You're doing okay. Just give it your best.
Yes, this was 20 years ago, and I had several patients needing help with opioid addiction and getting off of that. I did the data 2000, got the licensure for it, and it was very early in the Suboxone and
could you hold on a moment again, Dr. Stevens?
I wasn't even aware.
Give us just a moment, ma'am.
I think if we stop the video.
Okay, try that.
Sorry, try that again, Dr. Stevens. We did turn off your video to affect the bandwidth.
Anything that came from the pharmacist, I didn't order. I needed to have a. Okay, I've been listening to it all afternoon, and it's been fine. I guess it just doesn't like me. Where should I pick up? So basically, 20 years ago, Suboxone was new. The MAPS program, Michigan Reporting System, was the old version. I had not heard of it yet beyond knowing that stuff that came from a pharmacy was reported with the state. We still, as physicians, didn't have any way of tapping into that to check like we do now. So the Suboxone at that point came to the office, and then we gave it to the patient. I wouldn't give it to them until they'd gotten through the induction phase, so I'd give them one to take overnight and come back. That I needed a dispensing to send that one home. I could have administered it, and I did the first dose, but because I was sending one home, it was dispensing, as was what I was ordering for myself. I don't need to go into the personal details. I'd had 5 surgeries. I'd had the proper workups for being on pain medication. I wouldn't take it during the day while I was working.
Dr. Stevens, if anything's personal or confidential you don't want to speak of in a public forum, that's okay, too. That's
okay
to you. If you'd like to move to executive session for that, that's okay. You just let me know.
No, I guess it depends on what you all think, but the I had the lost the place.
I'm sorry. You were speaking of personal issues. That was not an excuse, I believe.
Well, multiple surgeries. multiple surgeries. Hired a lawyer when the state came to the door. Took myself to an addiction doc because it frightened me. What happened? Excuse me.
So I think it might be a good idea to move to executive session for personal and confidential information and potentially legal advice. I'll make that a motion.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I don't know what that means.
You're okay. Don't worry. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. You're good, Dr. Stevens. Give us just a moment to work this out. We're going to have some questions for you and allow you to make some statements in a confidential setting that's not part of the open public record. prison. Perfect. Thank you very much. I appreciate your patience, Dr. Stevens. I believe somebody still had further questions for you. Dr. Walker had a question for you.
Yes, Dr. Stevens, I was just curious what it is that you do. You have 36 state licenses and seeking another one.
I work full-time for K-Health, which is a national telemed company providing primary care, urgent care, and behavioral health care. And they wanted us to have as many licenses as possible. Within a year or so of starting with them, they transitioned to help cover the costs of the licenses. So we were all seeking to get as many licenses as we could to be able to help more people.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions for the doctor? Please go ahead, Ms. Chow.
Doctor, it appears to me that on your application you disclosed the one pill of Suboxone, but you didn't go into any detail about the self-prescribing, self-use.
My lawyer explained to me that those charges had been dismissed and they were going on with the MAPS reporting and the administrative fee. As I don't know how to use the right legal language.
Are you speaking of something? Are you speaking of an item that was sealed by the court? I'm using slightly close to correct language.
I don't know about sealed.
So the question is, did this happen?
Well, yes, it happened.
Okay, that was the question.
But the charges that were brought by the state, the explanation I was given, the self-use ones were dropped because I had good workups, I had the medical records. It was just the issue of the self-prescribing. So they based the, this is just my recollection, based the fine and the final, there's a specific word for it, disposition of the case as being for the dispensing of both the Suboxone, but also what I was in essence doing was dispensing without a pharmacy license for myself and for the Suboxone patient when it goes home.
Thank you. Are there any further questions for the doctor?
One last question. I apologize. With your work with K-Health, will you be prescribing any controlled substances?
No, I do not. We don't prescribe any online and haven't for quite some time.
Thank you.
Ms. Lindsay, the doctor answered ARS 32-1854-22 for me, but can you briefly go over the other ones that the doctor was noticed for, starting with 1854-5?
What are these numbers?
I'm sorry. You're okay, Dr. Stevens. Give my board staff a moment.
So ARS 32-1854-5, prescribing, dispensing, or administering controlled substances or prescription-only drugs for other than accepted therapeutic purposes. Board staff included that so that the board could determine if they were acceptable therapeutic purposes.
I don't know, like that.
No, give us just a moment, Dr. Stevens. I'm sorry. Ms. Castro.
1854-6, engaging in the practice of medicine in a manner that harms or may harm a patient, or that the board determines falls below the community standard. Staff felt that the self-prescribing and the disciplinary action does fall below the community standard, and it's at the board's discretion if they find that or not. 1854-18, having a license denied or disciplinary action taken against the license. The disciplinary committee in Michigan issuing the consent order is a disciplinary action that's taken in another state. 1854-19, committing any conduct or practice contrary to recognized standards of ethics. The board can determine if that conduct falls below the community standard. 1854-21, failing or refusing to establish and maintain adequate records on a patient. That was included because the doctor had not properly documented what medications were prescribed to herself. 32-1803, we included the adequate record definition for the board. 1854-23, prescribing controlled substances to a member of one's immediate family. I believe that that was just included to highlight to the board. She doesn't technically, not her own immediate family, but it raises the question of self-prescribing. 1854-35, violating a federal law, state law, or rule applicable to the practice of medicine. That was included in reference to failing to report to the dispensing to the Michigan automated prescribing system. 1854-36, prescribing or dispensing controlled substances or prescription-only medications without establishing and maintaining adequate patient records. We feel that goes back to not documenting what was being prescribed to herself. 1854-39, committing any conduct or practice that endangers a patient or the public health or may reasonably be expected to do so. That is a standard violation that is added, and at the board's discretion they can fine. 1854-40, committing any conduct or practice that impairs the licensee's ability to safely and skillfully practice or may be reasonably expected to do so. With that was added because we had information that she was self-prescribing, and the board can find if there's a concern of impairment. 1854-46, committing conduct in the practice of medicine that evidences unfitness to practice. Again, that is the board's discretion. 1822-A6, is not engaged in any conduct that, if occurred in the state, would be considered unprofessional conduct. The conduct and the consent order that Michigan took would be considered disciplinary action in Arizona and would be reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank. 1822-A7, physically, mentally, and emotionally able to practice medicine. That was included if the board had any concerns.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry to put you on the spot there, Ms. Castro. So we have several violations noted of our Arizona revised statutes. That being said, this did occur approximately 20 years ago. So my question to the board is, are they comfortable with a letter of concern referencing 1854-5, 6, 18, 22, 35, 36, 39, 46, and 1822-A6?
May, I don't know if the board wants to explore with Dr. Stevens for application on page 5580. I just thought
the answer is yes regarding contract non-renewal for standard dignity health program, June 2025. During your internship, residency, or fellowship program, were you placed on probation? Had your privileges restricted or suspended, terminated from the program, or any other adverse action?
Sorry, this is Kate Burke. I believe that's my case, which is next 60.
My assault. Oh,
okay. Well, thank you very much for speaking up, Dr. Burke.
Sorry,
I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Look at you paying attention.
Wow, I'm impressed.
I'm impressed.
All right, I apologize.
Thank you.
So was that a, you made a motion?
I did make a motion.
I'll second that.
So we have a motion and a second for a letter of concern with the ARS chapters as mentioned. Is there further discussion? Are there granting a full unrestricted license with a letter of concern? Yes, thank you.
Yeah, a consent agreement for licensure with issuing a letter of concern.
So, correct? Gene, can I do that without the consent agreement, or do I have to do that with consent agreement?
The process has been that it is with a consent agreement because she is an applicant.
Okay. Then the motion is with consent agreement for full licensure pending the letter of concern. I think I said that.
Is it an appropriate time to ask what that means?
Oh, not yet, but soon. Okay, good. Don't worry. It's a fair question from your perspective. Don't worry about that. Is there any further discussion? Are there any opposed? All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
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 Aye. So, yes, Dr. Stevens, that's a good question. Mr. Bohol and our staff will get a hold of you for describing that.
Yeah, we can contact Dr. Stevens.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead,
Dr. Stevens.
Okay, it wasn't reported to the database in Michigan, but it will now.
No,
give my staff a little bit of time to contact you. They'll help you go through that here. So give them a little bit. They'll talk to you about details.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry, there's a little bit to it here. We want to be fair to the other people on the call.
Yes, thank you.
You're absolutely welcome. Thank you very much, Pam, and thanks for your time. Okay, what would you like to go through next?
Let's go home. Let's go to 60, case number DO250170A, Dr. Caitlin Burke. I believe Dr. Burke, you're signed in to speak. Thank you so much for speaking up at the other case. Thank you. And I will have Ms. Castro provide the summary.
Dr. Burke has applied for licensure July 15th of 2025. Dr. Burke was issued a postgraduate training permit July 1st of 22 to June 30th of 2025. On the application, Dr. Burke disclosed that she was placed on academic probation by her program, Creighton University East Valley Residency, and her contract was not renewed. Dr. Burke completed PGY-1 without incident. During PGY-2, on December 20th of 2023, Dr. Burke received a notice of deficiency with a remediation plan. The program noted Dr. Burke demonstrated improvement during the remediation period and remained in good standing until December 3rd, 2024, when the Clinical Competency Committee identified recurrent and new concerns related to patient care, medical knowledge, practice-based and system-based learning, professionalism, and interpersonal communication. May 21st of 2025, Dr. Burke was placed on remediation with a performance improvement plan. Due to recurrent deficiencies in the competencies of patient care, professionalism, practice-based learning, and interpersonal communication. Documentation indicates that the remediation period took effect immediately and was scheduled to continue through June 30th of 2026. During the period of remediation, she was unable to demonstrate and sustain improvement, which led to non-renewal of her residency contract. PGY-2 was not successfully completed, and Dr. Burke is not currently attending a residency program.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kett. Dr. Burke, before you start to speak here, I would like to ask you to let us do two things here. One is start open session here, but I'd like to move us to executive session if that's okay with the rest of the board for anything that might be personal and confidential, because you do certainly have rights for confidential information. So I'd love you to speak to this case, but can you speak to these events on whatever you feel is appropriate for an open session, and then let me know, and then we'll move to executive session for personal and confidential information and potential legal advice after that. Is that okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Please go ahead. It's lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you. I'm sorry about the long day. I've been here with you guys in the shadows, though. So.
Good to see you.
I have a one-page statement prepared, so I hope I don't leave anything out. I feel comfortable telling the open session everything. Thank you. I want to start by saying thank you to the board for meeting today. Thank you to Irma for fielding all of my many, many questions. And she's been really great. And thank you for the opportunity to speak. I want to begin by saying that I have always been passionate about medicine. Like many of us, I have pursued this goal since I was a teenager. I've loved every step from pre-med through residency, and I remain deeply passionate and committed to being a physician. Earlier this year, I experienced several unexpected life events during my surgery residency. I struggled with depression and struggled through my separation and divorce. In addition, in April and May, I was the recipient of inappropriate behavior from two male attendings. I reported the behavior to my program director and she and me, but unfortunately, I remained on the rotation. My emotional state worsened. I received negative rotation reviews for the aforementioned attendings. And for the first time in my life, my character was called into question. These personal and environmental stressors affected how I showed up, and I'm sorry to admit that my performance at the end of my tenure did not meet my own or my program's high standards. I was placed on academic probation in May. The program cited clear collapses, professional, and decorum concerns. I was assigned to meet weekly with Dr. Heather Rabin, an organizational psychologist, which I did. She wrote a letter of support for me 3 weeks in and sent it to my program director. 3 weeks after being placed on probation, I was fired after arriving 15 minutes late to a shift, which I self-reported. They cited I broke a term in my probation. What I want to emphasize is that there was never any patient harm. My patients and their safety were and always will be my highest priority. This was an anomalous period that was brought on by devastating personal events and not indicative of my overall performance. Outside of this event, I accomplished a great deal in residency, 3 years of general surgery training, nearly 650 operative cases, the second highest annual in-service exam raw score in my program, service on our resident GME committee, 4 research presentations at local and national conferences, and a submitted research manuscript. You have received several letters of recommendation from attending physicians, 2 ICU charge nurses, and a volunteer coordinator attesting to my character and fund of medical knowledge. Since leaving residency, I have been in talk therapy every 1 to 2 weeks and remain on antidepressant medications under my PCP's care. I work part-time for the Hippocratic Collective, a group supporting wellness for medical trainees and physicians. I spent several weeks at home in Chicago with my family rebuilding my support system. This work has been invaluable in processing what happened and improving my resilience. I realize now surgery was not a good fit for me and I will likely never return to finish my surgical training. Service is at the core of my values, and I would like to use my degree to continue to serve vulnerable populations. While awaiting licensure, I volunteer and tutor 1 to 2 times weekly at GG Playhouse, the Society for Young People with Down Syndrome, and was named a volunteer lead. I've been working 4 days a week as a rock climbing instructor for children ages 4 to 7. On Thursday, I led a rock climbing session for teens who are blind and or deaf. Service is a constant of my life. I have 10 recurring or standalone volunteer roles from medical school alone, including pediatric hospice. Looking ahead, I'm excited to say I have been offered a full-time position as a wound care physician, serving LPX and SNFs across the Phoenix Valley. I completed 4 rounds of interviews, a background check, and a drug screen before receiving my offer. I'm passionate about this work, and I'm eager to care for a vulnerable population. I've reflected, I've grown, and I'm ready to do whatever the board finds fit in order to continue to serve.
Thank you very much. That was very well stated, Dr. Burke. Do I have any questions for the doctor in open session?
Do you plan on returning to a residency? I know you said you're not going to go back to surgical, but do you think that you would do a primary care? Do you be in internal medicine, pediatrics? It sounds like you have a lot of options.
Yeah, and right now, no. It was a very painful end to my residency. I, as you can see, was very, very much in love. I never planned on leaving. It was my whole world. And so I feel like I'm still healing myself and I'm not in the position to serve and in that way. And I am very open to it. I have thought about family medicine. And I would probably pursue hospice and palliative care. Pediatrics may be the same. As of right now, no. I really want to I want to find a rhythm and a consistency that surgical residency couldn't provide me. I want to continue my own wellness and really feel strong again and capable again. So definitely not for surgical residency, perhaps in the future for, as you mentioned, family medicine or pediatrics. Yeah. I'm sorry about getting so emotional. I am very passionate.
You're fine.
Drop of passion. Any other questions in open session? Otherwise, I'd like to make a motion to move to executive session for personal and confidential information and potential legal advice.
So moved. Are you?
We have a motion and a second from Dr. Chapon. Any opposed?
We are back in open session. Thank you very much. Do we have any other questions for Dr. Burke? That being said, do I have a motion for Dr. Burke?
I would make a motion for an unrestricted license.
We have a motion on the floor.
I'll second it.
We have a motion by Dr. Cunningham, a second by Dr. Chapin. Any further discussion? Any opposed? All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
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 Thank you very much, Dr. Burke, and welcome to Arizona. We look forward
Thank
to
you.
Your patients, and please continue with training, be it residency or not. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I would encourage you, please, Dr. Burke, to go into your residency program, because when you get to be my age, you're going to say, what was your training?
Yeah.
So many of these insurance plans, especially hospital systems, want somebody that is board certified. So
yes, sir.
Don't cut yourself short. You may just need this break for a little bit. But I encourage you this next year. I think you would be an excellent QCP.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I encourage you to recess every year and reconsider at that time.
Yep.
Perfect. Thank you all.
Thank you, Dr. Burke.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Is the board okay to continue for a little bit longer?
Sure.
Or how we did?
Good.
What would you like to do next, Mr. Bohol?
I think we could skip Section 7 and move to Section 8, case number DO190252A, which is Cesar Rodarte. I believe Dr. Rodarte is present, as well as his attorney, Mr. Carey.
Oh, I got it. I have to recuse myself.
I am still okay with it. Or am I at 4, correct?
Yeah, we have 4.
We'll give Dr. Cunningham a moment to work out, walk out. Okay. Thank you. And for consent agreement, do I need the doctor sworn in?
No.
Good. So who's presenting?
I will present board. In discussion with the doctor's attorney, has drafted a proposed settlement agreement to resolve this case. Board initiated case number DO19025 after receiving a complaint regarding allegations of unprofessional conduct filed against the physician in the treatment of patient AM. During its investigation, the board found the following: that the respondent used an electronic medical record that pre-populated the review of systems in the physical exam. No UDSs were documented until the last visit on December 3rd, 2029. Standard of care requires that UDS and documentation of the same before any course of controlled substances is started. No medical records from previous providers were requested for review. No controlled substance agreement was documented. The results of the UDS were inconsistent with medications prescribed to KM, warranting further discussion and consultation with the patient. And while patient presented with with back tenderness and spasm of the low back, that was not sufficiently apparent in the review of systems documentation. The standard of care requires adequate documentation for the basis of prescribing decision. The board has violations or conclusions of law for 1854-36, which prohibits the prescribing or dispensing of controlled substances and prescription-only medications without establishing and maintaining adequate patient records, as defined in 1800, number 3. The consent agreement is for an administrative warning, that would resolve and conclude the case.
Thank you, Mr. Bohol. I appreciate that. And Dr. Rodarte, would you like to speak to this?
Just briefly.
What happened to the information provided?
Sorry, Doc, I didn't mean to step on your statement.
That was my bad diction. Go ahead.
So one of the things that sitting this afternoon and watching is I think Dr. Chapin had some questions in a similar case that I think she wanted to know. And so I think this might help give the board a little bit more context. By way of, she did inquire on another doctor what his current prescribing is. And just for the sake of the board's knowledge, as this case was going when it initially was seen by the board, Dr. Rudarkin was already transitioning out of pain management. He is now completely transitioned out. And in fact, I had him phone his CSTMPs, both the full every script he's written, and also his stats. And I can avow to the board that we looked at the last six quarters of his PMP. He wrote no controls whatsoever, not just pain management, but no controls from September of 23 to June of 25. And he's essentially, in the last printout I reviewed, had four, and they were, you know, typical day-to-day things, you know, Vyvanse, the diazepam, nothing of a pain management ilk. So to give the board a little bit of comfort, what he did indicate to the board previously, he was interested in moving away. He's done that. He's gone back to a passion of his, which has always been family medicine. Also, I think that this was central, I don't speak for Justin, but this was central to also how he got here, is that Dr. Rudarte did 44 hours of intensive didactic training. He did the PACE record-keeping course, which is 17 hours, and he did the physician prescribing course, which is 27 hours, and that one does pack very heavily for patient compliance, medical board guidelines, controlled substance, and management of difficult patients. I'd also note that this case, the treatment events on this case occurred in 2019, so if nothing else, by the passage of time, the board has had 6 years to recognize that Dr. Rudarte is doing things correctly, and it's consistent with his otherwise 42 years of stellar care. So we felt that this was an appropriate way to resolve a case that's been around for a little bit, and so we would ask that you accept the CA.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carey. I appreciate that. Are there any questions for Dr. Rudarte from the board?
No.
Is the board comfortable with the information that we have presented? If so, I'll take a motion.
I'll move to accept the consent agreement for administrative boarding.
I have a motion from Dr. Walker. Do I have a second?
Second.
A motion and a second. Any further discussion? And I need a roll call for this.
That's correct. Ms. Fischel?
Aye.
Dr. Walker?
Aye.
Dr. Shippon? Dr. Mehta?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you very much, Dr. Rudarte and Mr. Carey. That's a very long day for you.
Thank you.
Oh, you have another one? Oh, do we want to move? Mr. Chair, if we could move to...
Yeah, we need Dr. Cunningham back.
We're going to move, if we could move to 8D, which is Jack Obadia. That is another one of Mr. Carey's cases. And
very good.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. And so this is case number DO-230059A, Jack Obadia. The doctor, I believe, is signed in to speak.
I'm sorry, just to clarify, Mr. Bo Hall, Dr. Cunningham is recused from this case.
Dr. Cunningham is recused.
Making sure we're on the right page. Okay, thank you. Carry on.
And Justin, Dr. Obadia is with me. He's to my, I guess, to your left, my right.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And then I will quickly provide a summary. Patient MC filed a complaint with the board regarding the care she received from the respondent during a surgical procedure in 2022. The respondent and the board's outside medical consultants agree that the respondent's patient's notes were lacking some detail or that operative reports had document deficiencies. The OMC's expressed concern that the operative report appeared to be derivative of a template and was very difficult to read due to syntax and spelling errors. There was difficulty in determining the date of the procedure, which required substantive review of other records to make a determination for complete information. The OMCs opine that the respondent's office notes were short, not very descriptive, and lacking in detail. Prior to the hearing, respondent completed the PDI Education MR-17 medical record-keeping course for 17 CME credits. The respondent's attorney reached out to discuss a potential settlement. Terms would be for an administrative warning for continuing education and a number of $17 in medical record keeping. The board could then deem if the medical record keeping course is enough to fulfill that requirement, and that would conclude this case before the board.
So I'm sorry, Mr. Bohol, the consent agreement refers to record keeping and record keeping only?
That is correct.
Thank you. And is the board comfortable with record keeping only being the consent agreement? We have other concerns mentioned here, including a level of training, preoperative testing. That's fine. Dr. Obadiah or Mr. Carey, we'd like to speak to this case.
Yes, and Dr. Madam, I anticipated that concern. It's actually been a subject of discussion with me and Mr. Bohol. So I wanted to give you some insight on this, and obviously Justin should correct me if I've gotten anything wrong. The onus or the impetus for asking for a consent on this one is we're not, you know, we have a general rule that we don't fight the board on things where we think there's a defect, and we think the documentation could have certainly improved, and Dr. Obadiah has done significant steps to fix that through the record-keeping course. I think there was and I don't like to speak ill of OMCs. I appreciate their role. There was just a pretty significant miss on this one, and I want to just go directly as to what happened here. The OMC's report had some provably factual errors on this one. There was an indication that there was no pre-op visit, but we produced the pre-op visit from October 8, 2020, indicating there was such an encounter. There were some concerns about no post-operative encounters, but there were 9 of them that were dated and signed. There was an H&P conducted the same day before surgery, and that was after previous H&Ps that Dr. Obadiah had done, because there was a break in the initial consultation and then when the young lady actually went to surgery. There also was a comment that there was no anesthesia records, but we actually redisclosed the second time with our materials the anesthesia records. So we think that there was really ample records in this case. The quality of some of the encounters was not charted as effectively as the board would like, and that's what led to the administrative warning and the CME suggestion. But the records are there, and, you know, this is a case where you know, I know we had a previous case that you heard with a number of revision procedures. This wasn't revision. This was 9 post-operative visits at no charge to the patient to continue to monitor her condition. So there was that issue. The other is there was a scope of practice issue, and I was really concerned about that because, first of all, I think that's potentially outside of the OMC's ambit of his opinion. But Dr. Obadiah has been a member of the American Academy of Cosmetic Surgery since 1996, and so he actually has been practicing in this field for a significant period of time, he may not be in the same board certification as the OMC, but he has an ample amount of both certification, and he also has specifically training in this area. There were also a few items that we were able to show concerning the decision, surgical decision-making. Specifically, the OMC claimed that a 650cc implant is doomed to fail. That is literally a D-cup. It is not something out of the ordinary that is being done here. It's a very normal procedure, very normal size. And if you actually look at the habitus and the frame of the young lady who received the procedure, it was photographically appropriate under the circumstances. This is someone whose habitus would allow and actually require an implant of that size. I think there's just nothing in this chart that, or in this procedure, that showed a rushed, unserious, or flippant approach as claimed by the OMC. We did provide the head of plastics for the VA hospital, who's trained in this area, a very detailed discussion of what was done. And one further thing that did come out of that was a criticism of Dr. Abadia for doing too much preoperative testing. And I was a little floored by that because normally we're in the flip of that, which is did not do the proper or enough preoperative testing. This is a case where it's strictly a cosmetic procedure, and a doctor can be as exacting as he wants to be on requiring preoperative procedures with cosmetics. And the trade-off is if the person doesn't want to do those procedures, they don't have to go to that doctor. This is very different than, I think, situations that many of the board members have encountered where they're doing emergent care or they're doing urgent care and those and they're making decisions immediately because someone's life is in danger. This is a cosmetic procedure, and I think Dr. Abadia, it goes against this idea of him being flippant when he's requiring very specific preoperative testing. Finally, we did go towards an administrative warning. This is because of the board's interest typically in situations like this, to document that something has occurred, but also to document in a way that's appropriate under the circumstances. And we stand on the fact that we believe the standard of care as to the procedure and pre-procedure decision-making and post-operative decision-making was done correctly. The documentation certainly was deficient and would benefit very much from the record-keeping, and it has benefited from the record-keeping. So we would ask that you accept this agreement.
I appreciate that, Mr. Carey. Dr. Obadiah, do you have anything to add before we open this to questioning?
No, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So the one question I have is in reference to scope of practice. The majority of the other things you mentioned besides record-keeping, I'm personally not terribly concerned about. And I understand that not all of the procedures required to be a plastic surgeon, of course. But what is your training besides being a member of an association?
Well, I was. Can I go back to the beginning, or as far as training goes?
Well, as long as you can keep it under a few hours.
No. I did my first residency in OBGYN, graduated in 96. I practiced 1 year OB, and then got board certified, and then dropped OB into the GYN, which led to multiple urogyne surgeries, vaginal reconstruction surgeries, to the point where I was teaching urogyne procedures for a few years. In my residency training back in Pennsylvania, I was trained as abdominal plasty a long time with hysterectomies. Going into that vaginal reconstruction world back then, labioplasty, that was a newer thing. I started looking into the boards that teach non-plastic surgeons cosmetic procedures. So I did like 300 cases with different doctors, took the board test, oral test with the cosmetic board, and became a fellow of the Organization of American Academy of Cosmetic Surgery. I was a preceptor teacher for those fellows for 10 years in the early 2000s, and again in 2014-16, teaching cosmetic surgeries to the Academy of Cosmetic Surgery Fellows. So I've done, my practice is limited to cosmetic surgery since 2005. I've done more breast augs than most plastic surgeons done in Arizona.
And Dr. Madam, just to make sure the board is aware, the AACS is more akin to is not a membership that you simply pay for or sign up for. It actually requires either a minimum of 12 months full-time AACS certified cosmetic surgery fellowship with them, or 6+ years in practice with at least 1,000 cosmetic cases. It requires a 2-day written and oral board, called an ABCS examination with a full scope of cosmetic surgery, including face, body, breast, and minimally invasive procedures. And it also requires a significant amount of formal fellowship training before you're allowed to even be part of the association. So it is rigorous. It is not that it is merely, and that's where I think the breakdown was with our OMC, is this is a fully formed credential that someone gets. It's not something that merely because you identify as a plastic surgeon that you can say that you are AACS. So there is a level of rigor there.
Well, that makes me feel a little better. Thank you very much, both.
Sure.
Any other questions for the doctor?
Dr. Obadiah, the OMC, you know, had commented on specifically on the procedure of the fat transfer procedure and the high risk with that. Can you just comment on your discussion with the patient and your training?
Absolutely, yeah. Liposuction and the following with the transfer of that fat that retains through that liposuction, it gets injected in, but usually in the buttocks or sometimes, I don't do any face work, so you can put it in the face or, but you put it in the butt, above the muscle, intra-adipose tissue, and when you do it, when you can do it wrong, it's a highly risky procedure, usually associated with the amount and the location where you put it. So I always talk to patients about, I won't do butt implants, that's where you put actual silicone implants in, that's way more hazardous, and results are terrible. So I give them an option, we do a low volume, intra-adipose injection, very low risk, never had an issue with it. The patient was content with the results here. The studies you see, a lot of the studies on the East Coast were Miami, where, you know, Mr. Miami, Dr. Miami does high volume, high injections, and they have higher risk problems. So in my opinion and my practice in Arizona for the past 25 years, it's a high risk situation. I stay low volume in the right places, and I don't do more than I think is appropriately safe, which is usually less than 500 cc's in each bottle.
Thank you, and I assume you discussed the associated risks with the patients.
Absolutely, we go through the risk to the point where they're almost not want to have the surgery because we the same risk for lipo and tummy tuck and breast augs and breast reduction. It's not. I tell them you're not getting a haircut here. You have a surgery that there are consequences, and you have to take that in consideration.
And Dr. Schwamm, we did not include this just because we felt like the complainant was not complaining about the actual BBL or the lipo transfer as part of her concern. We didn't really get into the weeds on this, but a lot of the studies really talk about where you get yourself into trouble with BBL is, as Dr. Abadio was saying, the amount, the location, with, you know, adding an implant, or depth of how deep you go with the lipo fat when you inject it. And that's all stuff that Dr. Abadia has controlled for. We didn't really want to go into the gruesome details of that because I think that was not a complaint. But there are controls in his practice that avoid sort of those red flag ways in which, you know, we hear the horror stories in the BBLs that are get infected or are too large for the person's habitus.
Thank you. Appreciate that for both. And just you had mentioned, Mr. Glenn, in the beginning you were discussing some modifications in the agreement. Is that still... I misinterpreted that. Is there, as far as the consent agreement, you said there was, you were talking to Justin about something, or did I miss
it? It's actually just, we were talking just about how this came to the board with an administrative warning plus CME. I just wanted you to have the background and the benefit of our negotiations. So that's why you have what you have before us. It was the factors that I laid out, and then obviously Mr. Bohall discussed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? If not, do I have a motion?
Make a motion to accept the consent agreement as presented.
I have a motion from Ms. Schell. Do I have a second?
Second.
A motion and a second from Dr. Walker, was it?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you very much. Is there any further discussion? Are there any opposed? And I need a roll call.
Yes. Ms. Schell.
Aye.
Dr. Walker.
Aye.
Dr. Shippoff.
Aye.
Dr. Mehta.
Aye. Motion passed. Thank you very much, Dr. Obadiah and Dr. Quinn.
Thank you. I hope you all have a good weekend, and thank you for spending your time on this important work.
Yeah, it's been a great weekend.
Thank you all.
Thank you. We're going to get Dr. Cunningham in now? We're on. Okay, good. Where are we going to move to next?
I believe Dr. Clay and Dr. Dean are not present, so I thought maybe going to 8E for Arthur De Luigi. I believe he signed in to speak.
8E, very good. Thank you. And if the board needs, please let me know, besides the well-rested Dr. Cunningham, if anybody needs a break.
We got the break again.
Okay, could we take a 5-minute break?
Sorry.
I can take two.
Thank you, Dr. DeLuigi. We are back in session. If you'd like, I can provide a summary, Dr. Manning.
Thank you very much. Please go ahead.
Okay. This is case number DO240010A, Arthur DeLuigi. The board is reviewing this case today at the request of Dr. DeLuigi with the request to terminate probation, but I will provide a history of the case. The board received a self-report from Dr. DeLuigi notifying the board that he had been arrested for disorderly conduct and assault and charged following an incident that occurred on February 8, 2024 in Scottsdale, Arizona. On February 8, 2024, respondent was a volunteer stationed at a medical tent at the Waste Management Phoenix Open in Scottsdale, Arizona. Respondent was scheduled to serve as a volunteer beginning at 7:30 a.m. and reports leaving the medical tent around 3 p.m. On February 8, 2024, following his volunteer service, respondent became intoxicated at the Waste Management after party and was ejected from the premises by Scottsdale police officers. Following the ejection, respondent was allegedly observed to be knocking down and throwing metal traffic barrier fencing, pushing over street signs, and using both hands. Respondent allegedly pushed a woman to the ground, causing her to fall to the ground and hit her head on the pavement. The conduct was captured on body cam and area camera footage. The respondent completed an evaluation in May of 2024. The results are in the board's files. As such, the board accepted a consent agreement for probation with continuing education in 10 hours and a civil penalty of $1,000 to be paid within 3 months, as well as various other terms regarding substance use. And at that, he has been on probation for a year and now is requesting termination of that agreement.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Mr. Boho. Dr. DeLuigi, would you like to speak to your request here?
Yes. I know that my legal counsel now, Mr. Nathan Hill, was unable to attend today, but he had sent a request to the board a few months back outlining everything that I've done over the past year. Even before then, from that standpoint, I had voluntarily, after meeting with Dr. Faria, I voluntarily went through the veterans program, which I signed the agreement there in June and started that in July, four to 5 months before we even had the consent agreement to start going through what the veterans offer. As a disabled veteran myself, I went through that process. So going through the group meetings with the VA, including Recovery 101, going through coping, their coping training for that portion, tension and stress reduction aspects of it, and as well going through all of the...
I'm sorry, Dr. DeLuigi, if there's anything yet you feel that would be fit to discuss in the executive session. I know the event was a public event, so most of this is public record, but if there's something you need to discuss in the executive session, just let me know. And if you're comfortable with open session, that's certainly your choice.
I'm comfortable. Thank you. Thank you. I was wondering about that myself, and my legal counsel is not available to ask me if I should or shouldn't do that. But I'm very proud of what I've done and accomplished. I've completely changed, my access and view on the way everything was going. Going through all of my, portions to get to where I was at, I was always burning the candle on both ends. To become, a residency director, fellowship director, chairman of a department, from that standpoint. And, I had always put my overall general health on the back burner. And, this really has enabled me to, reshift my life, with a much greater work-life balance, making sure I've taken care of all the medical things that I need, but that's not only just, from that standpoint of what medical care I need, but, mental, psychosocial, and knowing that I just can't, tough and push my way through it, from that standpoint. This is the most, it's been a very challenging 2 years, to have worked so hard for everything and allowing myself to have, gotten to the point where I did something which was, very regrettable. And so, but I've been, working with that on every aspect possible to make sure that, I've been 100% compliant. I've I'd ask Mr. Hill, because I'm an over-communicator. you know, if we should send updates all the time to you to, you know, show how well I've been doing. And so he wanted to wait until, you know, all of that stuff. Going through, I know you have the packet. You know, shortly after we signed the agreement, you know, the civil case had settled, and the person affected was made whole with the insurance by the insurance company. And then, in addition to that, you know, the legal claims were against me, were either the charges were dismissed, or I was given zero fines, zero penalties, zero jail time, zero anything from that standpoint. And with that, you know, then they have set aside and given me a certificate of second chance. I've continued to, in addition to that, I've not stopped there. I've continued to do as much self-help as possible. In addition to the CME, I went and taken Reiki certifications, so to look for other ways of natural healing from that standpoint, so I can continue to help patients much more beyond that, beyond just the medical care that I can potentially do, but also to potentially self-help, doing meditation, going through yin yoga, doing tai chi, going through, you know, every different aspect where I can see self-help and self-improvement for myself. And the VA, I cannot say more about how great the support groups from that and the Caduceus support groups that have been with all of this. Even if you have make a determination that I wouldn't have to do that, I'm still going to continue to work with my veterans groups and my Caduceus groups, you know, from that standpoint, because they've been absolutely life-changing for me. So from that standpoint, so I want to thank you all for your for what you do here, sitting here and listening to everything you go through. I know it's a difficult time, and it made me think about, you know, all of the things where I had gone through in my time, being a residency director. We had two persons with alcohol use that we had to go through with counseling. We had other with anger management who had, when they were on a way rotation, kicked a hole in the wall, you know, and how I had to work and help them, from that standpoint. I've learned, from my actions and my rededication and devotion to making sure that I get everything that I need to do to, help myself be a better person from that standpoint. And so that's basically what I wanted to say to you today. I wanted to thank you for your consideration of the request. I know that, I've been working with them. The people at Spectrum have been amazing. From the community integration, and I'm looking forward to continuing my work, even if you make a decision that I don't have to. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. DeLuigi. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. DeLuigi in open session?
I don't in open session, but I have a question for Justin. So he was on 2 years probation, correct?
Actually, the order did not specify.
Oh, there's no. Okay. All right.
And it'll be
2 years in February of 2026, right? You signed it in February 2024.
I apologize. I misspoke. The duration is 2 years unless it is extended or terminated by the board. So the agreement was signed.
February 2024, that's what I thought I saw.
November.
A year ago, yesterday.
A year ago.
On November 24th.
Yeah, the incident occurred.
So it's only been a year ago.
February.
Okay.
And the monitoring and everything is bundled in the same consent agreement, correct, Mr. Bohol?
That's correct.
Any further questions in open session? I'd like to make a motion to move to executive session for personal and confidential information as well as potential legal advice.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any opposed? All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
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 And these bacteria,
not a bad bacteria. It's
so much better than last week. It's just
see moths out. You see moths? I've seen a bunch of moths.
Yeah, see my umbrella that I found. Yeah.
I believe it is
on my Christmas light.
4:45 and we can resume.
Very good. Thank you very much. We're back in open session. And are there further questions for Dr. DiLuigi?
Doctor, I just had a question. Are you working now?
Yes, I am.
What are you doing?
I'm working part-time right now with a naturopath clinic, helping out with injections as a sports medicine physician.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Dr. DiLuigi, I understand your questions and concerns. I would like to be comfortable with termination of this probation, but personally, I am not. Do a significant number of board members disagree with me?
No.
I do, however, believe it would be reasonable for you to come back in another 6 months. I think you're in a better place, but I just want you so much to stay in that better place to be able to continue to function as a person and as a physician. And I'm not saying this to be punitive. I'm saying this because I'm concerned about you, and I'm concerned and want you to be able to continue to take good care of your patients. I do want you to get back to work to whatever level you're comfortable with, but we're not in a place that we can terminate the probation at this time. Mr. Bohol, do we need a motion or anything, anything else for that?
I would suggest that the motion be that you deny his request for the termination of probation and allow him to return in 6 months if he wishes to speak for me.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Any opposed? All in favor? Oh, I'm sorry. Do we need a roll call still?
You do not.
Okay. All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. I really do want you to continue to do well and come back in 6 months.
Congratulations on how well you're doing now.
Yes, absolutely.
You're doing outstanding, doctor. You really are. So we want you to know the board feels you. So we'll look forward to seeing you in 6 months.
Thank you. We appreciate your consideration, and thank you for your guidance.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Bohol, where are we going to?
I thought we'd invite the medical students to join us, and as they're joining, I would quickly just provide a verbal update, just to be expedient at our time. For the executive director's report, I will go ahead and email out the slides.
Before we get there, with our consent agreements, for Section 7 and for 8, B and C,
certainly would have.
And, of course, for 6A, or have those been removed from the agenda?
No, we would need to go back to those. I just don't have any people present to present them.
Oh, okay.
So they're not here?
Those individuals are not there. So.
Okay.
So I thought I would bring the medical students in. And
God
bless you.
Thank you very much.
Just trying to be expedient.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yep. And for my executive director's report, I will go ahead and just email out the slides. Just know that staff is continuing to work as efficiently as possible. We really take pride in our work, and we're doing really great things. And that is definitely evidenced by the number of applications that we're processing, as well as the number of complaints that we're bringing before you, as you can see from this bulky agenda. Please note that since the last board meeting, I have dismissed 16 cases, so that'll be available to the board members as well. And I believe we have some students present, so if you'd like to turn on your cameras, we would like to have the board engage with you. These troopers are trickling in, but they have stayed with us all day, which is quite impressive.
Yeah, it's quite impressive. It's a long day, man.
How many?
And Mr. Bohol, I asked you to give us these bulky agendas, so thank you very much for doing so. I really want to empty our dockets.
And while the students are joining, we have 88 students viewing.
Oh.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. Okay. So thank you all for hanging in there and spending the entire day with us, if that's reasonable. I don't think the weather is very good anyway, so I don't think you wasted too much of your time. So I'd like to give you the opportunity to ask questions of the board. If I could precede that with a brief introduction of who our board members are. One of our board members, Mr. Goodman, had to step out for personal reasons. He is a lawyer by trade, and he's been a board member with us for 3 or 4 years?
3 years
now. Our board consists of public members as well as physicians, because the board is here for the public, not specifically for physicians. They're here to protect the public, as I droned on about in the beginning of the meeting with you. So obviously their input is very important. That being said, we also have some very experienced physicians. That's my nice way of saying old.
OLD.
So I'll pass it on to you.
Doug Cunningham, I've been in practice for a few years, as Dr. Radom said, a primary care. I'm so glad you guys are here. You're the future of our practice and our profession, really it is. So thank you for coming. I know Dr. Bainham always likes to speak to you. Want me to go ahead and do that right now?
No, let's just...
Okay, go ahead. That's me. Okay, good. Nice to see you all.
I'm Dr. Maytam, trained internal medicine and emergency medicine. I've been practicing emergency medicine in the Phoenix area for 26 years. And enjoy the privilege of sitting in these seats for I don't know how long. Dr. Chapat.
Dr. Chapat, I'm board certified in anesthesiology and pain medicine. I think I've been practicing in Arizona for
not that long.
I don't know. It's a long day.
And a long time.
Sometimes, yes. I'm not in pain, mate. and I've been on the board since after everybody here. That's all I know. And thank you all for being here.
Hi, good evening. I'm Dr. Walker. I am family practice board certified, residency trained up here in Mesa, hospital none of you guys know about, Mesa General, but but I work in the rural setting, so I'm in Wilcox. If anybody's interested in a rural rotation, I do have students and happy to have you. And I've been on the board. My first board meeting was very memorable. It was February 29th of 2020. And then we went virtual for a very long time. So I've been on here almost 6 years. So thank you.
My name is Pamela Pichelle. I'm the other public member on the board. I am a retired state employee, and in my 24 years with the state, 18 of those were spent as a board administrator in healthcare regulation.
So you can see we have a very varied board. We're the people who do 10, maybe 5% of the work. The rest of our board staff does actually all the heavy lifting, so thank you very much to them for all the work that they do. I'd like an opportunity for our board members to pass on some wisdom to the prime medical students.
Okay. Got any questions first?
Okay, please.
Can't comment on any of the cases that we talked about, but do you have any questions with the board?
Otherwise, we're going to ask you questions. You pick.
Does somebody have a question? I can't.
Yes, yeah. Go ahead. iPad 210.
Sorry, I can't figure out how to change it. Good evening, everyone.
That's okay. That's not a violation.
All right. So we got that settled. My name is Dr. Danielle Kennedy. I just wanted to ask, it seems like a lot of cases that came up today, it seems like there was, with communication issues, a patient as far as expectations versus outcomes on a lot of different cases, especially when it came to cosmetic stuff. I wondered if you guys had any comments on that specifically.
Oh, boy, do we.
Well, I think that is, you could see there, we can't comment specifically on these cases, but I'm going to tell you that communication is key when you're dealing with patients. I think that you need to have
set boundaries with patients then too. I think that, you know, to tell them what, you know, what their expectations are may not be what you think you could do for them, okay? I think that was apparent today with a lot of our cases as well. But again, I think that being the provider, the physician, you're the one who's in control. And it is so important, yes, we have patients that we work together with, but it's important that you realize that role and you maintain that role too then as well. Because if that wavers, I think patients then start maybe trying to do other things, or they have expectations that you may, they thought they were going to get, but were not be able to get from you. And so that's that would be my suggestion. I don't know if any other board members have any thoughts on that, or how I expressed it.
Let me ask all the students with a show of hands, who of you have noticed a large variation in the physicians that you've learned from in the amount of time they sit with a patient or talk to a patient between abrupt and being like your mother, right? A huge variation. So who do you think has noticed a variance in outcome depending on the amount of time that you take with the patient? And when you actually sit with the patient, explain what to expect and what their options are and what other things can be done instead. Have you guys noticed a big variation in that? So basically a lot, I won't say a lot, there certainly is a trend of physicians to see a patient, order tests, and give a diagnosis, and that's the majority of their time with the patient. There's some people who are teaching not being hands-on, not connecting mind, body, and soul, and that's not what we do as osteopaths. We don't neglect those factors here. You have to treat the whole patient if you want to have a higher chance of a good outcome. So I think those communication issues are fantastic learning points. You'll be able to obtain your patient's trust better if you, what is it called, listening? How much does that cost test-wise to listen to a patient? You don't need pre-authorization. The return time of the test is low, and it gives you a chance to try to understand what a patient is getting to. You'll find many times when a patient presents, their chief complaint or statement is actually not what they're getting at there, but that's their understanding or their opening for you to get to the actual problem. And if you don't get to the actual problem, your chance of succeeding at treating it is very low. So, yes, communicate, empathize, and try to understand your patients. Just like the board's dynamic, you all are dynamic, a very diverse group. So are your patients there. So try to have a hand in the understanding of your patient's needs and comprehensions. There, some people will take a longer time, and some people won't, and you just have to be able to understand that variability. Anything else from the board on that?
I'll add on a little to that. So, yeah, certainly in these cases, like I said, the communication and also what you're communicating, make sure you're documenting. Just without the documentation, you know, I mean, I don't know, many of you may have the AI system where it's recording everything you're saying, and that's great because that'll help with the laborious documentation that we do. But if it's not documented, then it no matter how much time you spent communicating, it's not part of the record, it didn't happen. And also, and then just in response to that, also knowing your limitations, your ability, and your scope, and staying within those, and not being pressured to go out of those. No matter what you're trying to think you're trying to do for the patients, going out of those out of your scope or out of your ability or out of your what you're comfortable with is going to get you into trouble. And no matter how well you think you know that patient or have that communication, it's still your license and your livelihood. So.
Anything else from the board?
Yes, adding on to that, I was thinking about a couple cases where some personal boundaries were a little bit gray. We didn't have anything too egregious today. We have that like we've had in the past. But sometimes as physicians, we treat family members, distant family members, friends. Just remember that you need to maintain the documentation. You need to maintain your policies and procedures the exact same as you would with any other. Do not assume that, oh, because they're a friend, that you won't get in trouble. That's when you do get in trouble, and your documentation needs to be just as good as it is with anybody else. So maintain those personal boundaries.
Mm-hmm. It's okay if you don't have anything further on that, and Ms. Michelle. Very good. Beat that to death. Any other questions from the medical students? Is there any last wisdom you'd like to pass on?
I just want to pass on. You saw some cases here today, and I think that I just want to pass on to you that if any of you have any issues with substance abuse or alcohol or any of those types of things, please take care of that now, because if you get into practice and something happens and you come before the board, I'm just going to tell you, it usually doesn't go very well, okay? It just doesn't. So you may have a friend or a colleague that's with you, and if you know that they have an issue, you may lose a friendship, but it's so important that you confront them and take care of that problem, because it's so much better to do it now. Maybe it might cost you a year, and you may delay a year if you're having to go through some rehab or those types of things, but please take care of those things. Make sure that you're healthy and doing those things. And what do I always tell my students that rotate with me? By the way, I take students as well, too. If you have one drink, who do you call? Uber or Lyft, okay? Because if you do get a DUI, it will follow you for the rest of your life. And so it will all the way into your professional life, where you get on staff, insurances, you're going to have to write that letter. So make sure that you are responsible, healthy, and we look forward to seeing you possibly in our office someday, okay?
Thank you, Dr. Cunningham. If I can ask the medical students another question, just by show of hands, who can't wait to be done with medical school? Raise your hand.
It's okay.
I thought you were going to ask who can't wait to be done with this.
Gene. I totally get it, please just keep in mind, it's nice to be done. It'd be great to be not spending an ungodly amount of money every year on education and actually have an income. I totally get it. But just appreciate every day where you are, who you are, and what you're doing. Life is not an objective. The only end goal or finish line for us is dying eventually. Everything else in between is just a chance to experience life, to experience each other, to learn, to help prepare to take care of yourself, to help learn to bear to take care of patients. So I get it. I wanted to be done too. And then I wanted to be done with internship. Then I wanted to be done with residency. And, you know, it's all the dang same thing. It's all living life. It's getting up in the morning for night shift, whatever, having a cup of coffee or whatever. But it's all about the experiences you get in between that cost nothing. So just please just be appreciative of where you are. Be amazed. I'm personally amazed that I've gotten this far. So be amazed. You're off the board. Be amazed that you have this opportunity to learn and to be able to take care of patients there. It's fantastic. So thank you very much for what you've done so far and what you're doing. Dr. Chapatin?
Just thank you all for being here, and hopefully you have some learned some things today and put things in perspective. I know when I was a student, this meeting certainly put into light a lot of things for my future, and I hope it does for you, and you take what happened today into your careers, and we don't see you at this meeting.
We hope to never see you here.
Maybe he's a board member. Dr. Walker?
No. I wish you well. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Ms. Michelle, any other last wisdom for these fine students?
Just thank you for being here. It's impressive to me that it shows your level of dedication to your studies. And it's not the most exciting time I'm sure you've spent, but I think you'll be surprised how much you learn.
You do know they don't have a choice about being here.
I just giving them. I have this back when I was with boards, and I think it is
crucial to your education. I really do.
I highly agree. So thank you very much. I hope you learned something. And for God's sakes, log off and do something.
Happy Thanksgiving. Good luck to you.
Thanksgiving. Thank you, everybody.
Okay.
Mr. Bohol, what would you like to do next?
Let's go back to 8B, which is case number DO-25-0042A, John Franklin Clay. I can provide the summary for this.
Go ahead.
Okay.
B.
On or about May 5th, 2018, respondent was arrested for a DUI in Cochise County. The respondent failed to provide notification of the charges to the board within 10 days as required by ARS 32-3208A. Respondent submitted a licensure renewal application dated October 30th, 2019, in which the respondent answered no to question number one, that you were arrested, charged with, or convicted of a felony or a misdemeanor. You must answer yes, even if the offense occurred outside of Arizona. The case has not yet been adjudicated. You completed a diversion program. You received a suspended sentence or probation. The convictions were dismissed or set aside, or your sentence was commuted. The records were expunged. Your civil rights were restored, or you received a pardon. During the course of an application for the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact Commission, the background check came back with the DUI. Staff inquired about that, and he requested to surrender his license. So through this, we have drafted a consent agreement to surrender the license. The doctor has signed it, so we're asking for the board to approve this consent agreement for surrender.
I don't 100% understand why the physician would choose this, but it's their right. That being said, I would make a motion to accept the consent agreement.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? And this is a roll call vote, correct?
Yes. Ms. Pichelle?
Aye.
Dr. Walker?
Aye.
Dr. Shippock?
Aye.
Dr. Cunningham?
Aye.
Dr. Maidham?
Aye.
Okay, moving.
Justin, how old a guy is this? I'm curious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's born in 87.
Oh, he's young.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
Carry on, Ms. Ball.
Okay, moving on to case number DO-25-010A, Ronald Dean. This is another consent agreement for surrender. Let me pull this up. This has been signed by the doctor. According to the U.S. States District Court, District of Montana, Missoula Division, case number CR-2433-MDWM-1 was filed on June 24, 2024. Respondent pleaded guilty to one count of 18 U.S.C. 1349, conspiracy to commit wire fraud. The board did not receive a notification of the charges from the respondent. On February 9, 2025, respondent agreed to a sanction with the Montana Board of Medical Examiners in which the respondent voluntarily surrendered his Montana physician license as a resolution to this matter. In accepting the surrender of his license, the board will enter an order revoking his Montana physician license pursuant to Montana Code 3713121A, effective on the date the final order is entered. The final order was effective April 21st, 2025. On July 9th, 2025, via email, respondent notified board staff that he wished to relinquish his license to practice osteopathic medicine in the state of Arizona. So board staff is requesting that the board accept this consent agreement for Dr. Dean.
Any further questions from the board? Otherwise, I make a motion.
Make a motion to accept the consent agreement for voluntary surrender of license.
Okay.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Go ahead, Mr. Bohol.
Ms. Pichelle. Dr. Walker.
Aye.
Dr. Cunningham.
Aye.
Dr. Chiffon. Dr. Maiden.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes the consent agreements. If we move to Section 7, this is the proposed consent agenda for dismissal or other action. All three cases are for issuing a non-disciplinary letter of concern. The memos were provided in your board materials. Staff is asking for approval of the consent agenda. The board may take any individual case off, and we would reschedule that for the next meeting.
Are any of these physicians present?
No physicians are present.
Okay.
you to give a brief summary of each?
I can give a brief summary of each.
Hold on.
In case number DO240168A, Jack Wolfson, the complainant is anonymous. The complainant states that Dr. Wolfson is advertising on his website that he's board-certified in cardiology. The complainant states, according to the American Board of Internal Medicine, Dr. Wolfson has not been board-certified in over a decade, nor is he participating in the maintenance of certification process. The complainant alleges that Dr. Wolfson claims his license is based in Scottsdale. However, he has illegally conducted patient visits remotely from his home in Colorado since November of 2023. The complainant alleges Dr. Wolfson did not use proper cybersecurity for personal health information via HIPAA regulations. Our medical consultant reviewed this and determined that there was a deviation in standard care and that Dr. Wolfson advertised he's board certified in cardiology on his website when his board certification had ended. Dr. Wolfson states he chose not to renew his certification on July 31st, 2024, but failed to change his website. It was changed in December of 2024, which was the time of the complaint. So at this time, staff recommended a consent agreement, a consent agenda for a letter of concern.
I think you could summarize all three.
Oh.
And then we can talk after that.
Sure. And moving on to DO230040A, Dr. Eisenberg. Let's see. The complainant is a funeral director. The complainant notes that patient WB passed away on February 8, 2023. He notes the death certificate was sent to Dr. Eisenberg as of February 15, 2023, and it was still not signed or certified. The complainant notes that he has left messages with the doctor's practice office, states that the receptionist told Dr. Eisenberg that told him that Dr. Eisenberg was having trouble signing into the system, and the funeral director notes that Dr. Eisenberg did not call the Bureau of Vital Records helpline. He notes Dr. Eisenberg is in violation of ARS 36325G for not certifying the record within 72 hours. Dr. Eisenberg's response, he states, he was in a new office setting and they never updated the DAVE system from that location, so it took him longer to get this done. He states once he resolved the sign-in issues, he signed the death certificate on February 20th, 2023. Staff has verified the death certificate was signed on that day. It does not appear that Dr. Eisenberg fell below the standard of care. However, staff recommends issuing a letter of concern for failing to sign the patient's death certificate within 72 hours as required, in that it took Dr. Eisenberg 12 days from the patient's passing to sign the certificate. And then, moving on to DO250099A, Chad Terry. The complainant is the compliance officer for Talkiatry. The complainant states that Dr. Chad Terry was employed as a staff psychiatrist at Talkiatry from November of 2023 until May of 2025. He alleges Dr. Terry discharged a patient on April 29, 2025 for acting in an unacceptable manner, but without first discussing the unacceptable behavior with the patient. Dr. Terry states that Talkiatry requires psychiatrists to choose between multiple pre-written discharge letters, and there was no means of altering any information in the letter. He states there was no letter that explicitly addressed the situation, so he chose the poor behaviors option as it came close to the representing the situation. Staff's concern with this was that he failed to discuss this with the patient prior to issuing the letter, and he was subsequently terminated from his employment at Talkiatry. Because of the concern by Talkiatry, as well as the board's concern for providing false or misleading documentation in the patient's medical records stating that he had had this conversation with the patient, we felt a letter of concern was appropriate.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Do any of the board members have a concern with any of these letters of concern that they wish to leave it out of this section? I'm comfortable with the data as
if you're going to say the same thing I'm going to say.
Go ahead.
The first one, on yes. Traffic, affection, CO, Wolfson. It's still on the website, still claims for certification.
Okay. If you'd like to pull that one, we can bring it
yeah,
back.
That needs to be removed before we can sign that, I would say.
Okay.
So we'll remove A.
Yes. Let's go ahead and do it that way. So we'll remove item number A.
So if the doctor changes the website, then we'll just put it back on the agenda for another concern.
It says he's a cardiologist.
It flashed on a minute. It was a flash that came on the website that said board certified cardiologist. And
right.
We can review that.
Perfect.
Okay. Good. So we're maintaining items B and C,
yes.
Eisenberg and Terry, in our proposed consent agreement. I assume we need a motion on each of those letters of concern?
You can take them as one motion.
I'll make a motion to accept items B and C, Dr. Eisenberg and Dr. Terry, for letters of concern as discussed.
Second.
Any further discussion? Any opposed? All in favor?
Aye.
Moving on to our last case, which is 6A, which is DO 250150A, Brittany Woodall. The applicant is not signed in to speak, and neither is her attorney. And I can provide a quick summary. While on a PGT permit in Arizona on or about January 2021, applicant's program placed her on suspension between January 2021 and April 2021. For inappropriate behavior and comments made during patient care, the program provided a performance improvement plan for the applicant. Applicant was placed on an educational enhancement program on January 4th, 2021 to address her poor performance regarding clinical expression of knowledge. On the 14th of January, applicant was immediately suspended from patient care due to the following incident. As stated by the nurse manager of perioperative services, the patient was brought into the OR by anesthesia and an RN. Brittany was speaking loudly and swearing. The RN asked her to stop because the patient was still awake. Brittany replied, "She has dementia. It's not like she's going to effing remember anyway." The nurse and anesthetist remained at the head of the bed and reassured the patient that she was going to be well cared for. The patient replied, "It doesn't sound like it." Brittany did not stop her loud and inappropriate conversation. I verified all of this with the staff in the room at the time and also filled out the form and placed it in her envelope. Board staff also notes a history of unprofessional communication and outbursts regarding swearing at staff and interactions with the applicant. The board reviewed applicant's licensure application on September 19, 2025. The board voted to grant licensure upon the signature of a non-disciplinary consent agreement for a letter of concern for the conduct of the applicant. The document was sent to the applicant, who refused to sign the agreement. She requested modifications to the agreement. Staff worked with the Attorney General's office to address her requests. The modified agreement was sent to the applicant and her attorney. They have again refused to sign the proposed consent agreement. Then, on November 13, 2025, at 7:35 p.m., board staff received a letter from the applicant's attorney offering a modified consent agreement for the board's consideration, which has been uploaded to your case materials. The attorney stated that the applicant will not be present at today's proceedings, but the board can proceed as it wished. The board has the following options. The board can continue the application and direct staff to place the application on a future agenda for investigative hearing for adjudication by the board, or the board can continue the application and direct staff to reschedule the application review at a future meeting. The board can reissue the consent agreement as written and set a time frame for signature. If not signed, the application is withdrawn, or the board can withdraw the consent agreement and issue the license without a letter of concern.
Just for the recording, Brittany refers to Dr. Woodall.
That's correct.
Thank you. So I'm confused, though, if you can help me. We're trying to help this doctor who's requesting licensure in a timely fashion, but they keep making changes preventing us from doing our job?
That's correct.
Gene, what's your thoughts on what they suggested?
I'm here to offer legal advice. Any questions?
they have submitted a counterproposal that I would ask you to either accept or reject. They, by offering this counterproposal in the consent agreement, they seem to be backing away from the request that we just issued a consent agreement. So if you look at this proposal that they put last time to see if that is acceptable to you.
Does this set some kind of a precedent for issuing licenses with a consent agreement? Is it typical that we negotiate consent agreements with applicants?
It's not unheard of.
Yeah.
So can you go over the differences in their request for modifications in the last letter for the record? Because that's referring to the letter from the 15 and 25?
Yes, and confirming.
Take your time. We have all day. I just want to do each one of these correctly. Take your time.
Do the matter issue. Okay. Language changed in item number 4. Applicant asserts that she had attempted to comply with the interim order to obtain an evaluation, but board staff had not provided complete information regarding the evaluation process and had indicated her evaluation would not be accepted if board staff had advised her that in lieu of an expected denial of licensure, she could withdraw the application and reapply. Changing language in section 5 regarding the program, the comprehensive psychological evaluation results, and there's language changed in there.
So would it be the board staff's recommendation? I'm still a little concerned about the behavioral problems with this doctor, just to bring it to investigative hearing. Do you think that would be the best way to adjudicate this?
It would give the opportunity for the board to actually conduct an investigative hearing and speak with the applicant directly and demonstrate that the board would like for her to participate.
Don't we always tell... He just said this last night. You said at 7:30, is that right?
It was Thursday night.
Oh, Thursday night.
Thursday night at 7:30.
Are they supposed to do it?
2 weeks in advance.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't even, we shouldn't even, in my humble opinion, we just move it to the next agenda.
Okay. If that's what the board would like to do, we can reschedule this for the January agenda.
That's fine. Perfect.
Okay.
Should we schedule it as both an investigative hearing and a license, or can we do both?
We so can if you
can
best.
Resolve it.
Yeah, we can do both. We will schedule it for an investigative hearing as well as application review.
Perfect.
Yeah. And with that, I believe I have concluded the agenda. Anything else we're missing? I think we're good.
Hard to believe.
You are dismissed. That's your
Oh, no.
Yeah. Good job.
I would like to make a motion to adjourn this session. I appreciate everybody's hard work. And I assume I have a second and everybody's in favor.
Second.
Nobody's opposed. All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Honestly.